Jennifer, Mississippi. Here's Graceland with Jennifer Meadows.
So, George Stephanopoulos is catching a lot of heat following a discovery that he failed to disclose a $75,000 personal donation to the Clinton Foundation. Now, Stephanopoulos has been covering the controversy over the Clinton Foundation's foreign donors. And now we have a controversy within a controversy, as we're finding out dozens of media organizations, Stephanopoulos and his measly little donation aside, have given millions of dollars to the foundation as well. But thank you for listening to Graceland on WNJC 1360 and from our TK Radio network. I'm Jennifer Meadows, and our guest this afternoon is Matthew Vadim, who is an award-winning investigative journalist who has appeared on The O'Reilly Factor, The Daily Show, and CBS News, and we're going to be talking to him about Ferguson's Rent-A-Mobs. Now, that wasn't a spontaneous protest, we're finding out. Actually, it was all planned. And we're going to be talking to him in just a few minutes about his article in Front Page Magazine. Then at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be joined by the other co-host of the show, Charles Albert Johnson III. We're going to continue this discussion about Stephanopoulos and the controversy. Is ABC News going to do anything about this situation? Well, we don't think so, but we're going to talk about that in a few other stories as well. And right now, I am joined here by my co-host, Curtis Mang. And Curtis, George Stephanopoulos, you know, he just signed a contract with ABC News for $105 million. So pays pretty well to be a commentator or news person over there, doesn't it?
Indeed it does. And so I think you kind of answered your own question about what ABC is going to do with him. They've got 105 million reasons not to do anything.
Let's break away real quickly for a commercial, and when we come back, our guest will be here with us. We're going to be talking to Matthew Vadim about his article in Front Page Magazine. We'll be back in just a moment.
Wow, yeah, since the storm, it's been crazy busy for us. We got all kinds of office desks coming in. Now, here's a fancy one right here. It's missing a leg, but that's all right. Whatever. Washers and dryers from a laundromat. Oh, wow, and check this out. Another deep fryer. And I'm not sure what this doohickey is. Yeah, most businesses weren't ready for a storm like that, you know. But our work's really piling up here at Roberts & Son Salvage.
What will become of your business after a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency. And 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now, before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the American Red Cross, and the Ad Council.
Hello, friends. This is Bradley Dean with the Sons of Liberty Radio.com and Sons of Liberty Media.com, taking a moment to say thank you to none other than Jennifer Meadows. The only way that we're going to change this nation is by having people stand up and speak the truth, regardless of status quo or the politically correct. And that's exactly what she and her crew are doing. So make Graceland with Jennifer Meadows an integral part of your week and be encouraged. And don't forget, we can do this together.
It's a bittersweet symphony.
Well, this is Graceland on WNJC 1360. I'm Jennifer Meadows, And we are waiting on our guest, Matthew Vadim, to call in, and I believe he will be with us, will be joining us any moment. But we were just talking about Curtis in our opening about George Stephanopoulos, and actually I believe Matthew is with us. He's a very busy guy. Matthew, can you hear me?
Yes, how are you? Greetings from Kazakhstan.
Ah, awesome. I mean,
I'm actually in Washington, D.C., but I'm on the grounds of the embassy of the Republic of Kazakhstan. So.
Well, where's our invite? We would have loved to have come. How's the food?
You missed some excellent goat.
Oh, boy.
if that's what it was. I'm not really sure what it was, but
Oh, man. Well, I'll pass on that, but I'm sure there's probably something better. But anyway, Matthew, we appreciate you joining us this evening. I knew you had another engagement, so I'm glad that you could make it,
Here.
Well, our guest today is Matthew Vadim. Matthew is an award-winning investigative journalist and a senior editor for the Capital Research Center. His articles have appeared in the Weekly Standard, Fox News, The Wall Street Journal, and a number of others as well. Matthew has appeared also on The O'Reilly Factor, CBS News, The Daily Show, and also he's got a book out, Subversion, Inc. You can find that out on Amazon.com. Matthew, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Good to be here.
Now, today we're going to be talking about this Ferguson, your article in Front Page Magazine about rent-a-mobs being exposed. So what? You're telling me this thing in Ferguson, this was not just a spontaneous event. So tell us about your article, Matthew.
Okay. Well, what was discovered by another blogger, and then I just enhanced the information that was available, was that a lot of the protesters were being paid. They were on the payroll of George Soros. They were being funded by Acorn's successor group. You remember Acorn, the Acorn Network, Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now.
Yes.
The group that Obama worked for previously and gave lectures to and helped out all that he could went belly up. It went, filed for bankruptcy and dissolved at the end of 2010. And but all these successor groups were put in place. And what happened is the Missouri chapter incorporated itself separately without the Acorn name, without the brand. So this rebranded nonprofit goes by the acronym MOR, Missourians Organizing for Reform and Empowerment. And it is one of many groups that George Soros has given about $33 million to promote to promote civil unrest, to get the races hating each other and at each other's throats. In other words, to promote the Black Lives Matter, the Black Spring movement. So all sorts of people were hired in to protest in Ferguson, Missouri. And, you know, if you're going to have professional agitators, troublemakers, professional rioters and looters on the payroll, you better damn sure pay them.
These are not
the kind of people you bounce a check to.
And, well, first of all,
they didn't pay them, and they revolted and started complaining on Twitter.
Yeah.
And that's how we found out about it, because they stiffed them.
Well, damn,
which Acorn has a long history of doing.
That damn Soros guy, man, where isn't he? He's behind everything, it seems like. He's just everywhere,
well,
I'm telling you.
He overthrew lots of governments in Eastern Europe, so.
Yeah,
America is a tougher nut to crack, though. Fortunately.
So, and you told us a whole lot there, but tell us again. Now, what are some of the activities that – so Acorn has been, you know, rebranded, and it's now called MOR, and I think that's Missourians – help me out here.
Missourians Organizing for Reform and Empowerment, but that is only the Missouri state chapter. There are other – rebranded Acorn successor groups. MOR is one of the most active. Mm-hmm. Also very active is the one in California, which operates out of the same office that Acorn California used on Grand Street or Grand Avenue, South Grand Avenue in Los Angeles. California Acorn is now called Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment, or ACE. The one in Texas is called Texas Organizing Project, or TOP. The one in New Mexico has a really fun name, actually. That's the only thing that's good about it. They're Organizers in the Land of Enchantment, or Olé.
Oh, it sounds kind of cute. It sounds so happy and stuff. And
it does.
tell us, Matthew, now, real quickly, what type of activities do these groups do, one? And secondly, are we going to see this model again like what we saw in Ferguson? You know, did we see that in Baltimore? Did we see that in Baltimore, actually?
Well, President Obama is a Marxist. He hates America. He likes stirring up trouble. Civil unrest is in the best interest it serves his goals. He wants to turn America. I used to think he wanted to turn America into France or Greece. Now I'm starting to think I had the wrong idea. I think he wants to turn America into South Africa, where the races are constantly at each other's throats, and there's tremendous upsurge in violent crime and rapes and murders ever since apartheid was overthrown. I think that's more the model that he's looking for nowadays, is to play the races off against each other so that we just eventually destroy ourselves, and then once that happens, then something new can be built in its place. And it's not going to be like the America that we know and love.
And by contrast, France looks really good, you know, from what you're describing. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'll take France over that any day.
South Africa is just a big, as you know from watching news reports, it's an armpit, a cesspool, a terrible, terrible place. I'm not saying it was good under apartheid, but it's far worse now.
Right. Well, today our guest is Matthew Vadim, who is an award-winning investigative journalist and senior editor for Capital Research Center. His articles have appeared in the Weekly Standard, Fox News, the Wall Street Journal, and a number of others as well. And Matthew, I am here with my co-host, Curtis Mang. And Curtis, it is pretty interesting. We're not hearing a lot of media reporting on this story.
Well we aren't. We aren't, and I think that's why it's so critical that Matthew and others are raising this issue. But Matthew, first of all, it's very good to speak with you, and I've got a couple of questions. First off, these rent-a-mobs are, as you described correctly, I believe, professional agitators. I sort of see them hanging around like Batman, just waiting for someone to give the bat signal, and they leap into action. But really, how does that work? I mean, do any of these people have real jobs, or what is it they do in between, leaping from Ferguson to Baltimore or wherever else and creating these scenes?
Well, Karl Marx never had a real job. He was a lazy bum who just hung out in coffee shops and was so lacking in interest, concern for his own family. He let children die. Some of his children die from neglect, from an inability, a lack of medical care. And it's not like he could have done something. He wasn't stupid. He was just a lazy, a lazy dirtbag. a lot of these people are professional activists, community organizers. They're not. Money isn't that important to them. They just get by, and they're often content with that. If they wanted to, be rich, then I don't see how they could be community organizers. Someone who wants to make a lot of money isn't going to be drawn to that kind of thing unless their name's Barack Obama. And even he only put up with it for a few years. Eventually, he decided he needed to actually make a living and that he thought he could be more effective from inside the system. So,
well, that is...
Yes, these people don't have jobs, or they're on welfare, food stamps, or whatever. They do, the ends justify the means. They do whatever they have to survive, and it's been like that for the last 50 years. The parent organization of ACORN was called NWRO, National Welfare Rights Organization, and its founder, George Wiley, used to not pay the phone bill. Oh, sorry, not pay the employees in order to be able to pay the phone bill. If there was a shortfall. And he would told people that they had to act like they were, soldiers in an invading army. They had to, live off the land. And he expected them, if necessary, to go work for or get on the payroll of other organizations so they could continue doing the important work
that he had assigned to them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's the way these people think. They're not into money. Somebody who's not into money is actually kind of dangerous.
Yes, we agree.
Absolutely, absolutely. I do want to ask you to explain something that you mentioned in your article about some of Moore's tactics beyond the civil unrest that we saw in Ferguson, and that has to do with what some of the members did in and around the neighborhood where a St. Louis circuit judge lived. And I thought it was fascinating, and I'd like you to explain that situation, what they did and what they were trying to accomplish.
They were unhappy. They wanted some reforms in the local criminal justice system. And there was a judge who was the administrative judge for the circuit, for the state circuit court that was in Ferguson. And so they lobbied her. They went to her and, talked with her in her courtroom to press for various changes. And she didn't get back to them in a timely fashion. So they decided to get in her face, and they canvassed her neighborhood and started handing out leaflets with their demands, and they left some for her. And, this is basically like a narco-trafficking gang saying, "We know where you live, Your Honor. Don't mess with us."
Right.
And it's scary, these thugs. This is not democracy in action. The left likes to say, this is what democracy looks like, one of their, mindless chants that they repeat at rallies. Mm-hmm. This is not what American indirect democracy, usually looks like. This is thuggishness. This is the kind of thing done in places like Cuba and Venezuela and, in third world dictatorships. You send obnoxious people, stormtroopers, basically, to keep people in line, to frighten them, to chill their speech. And when they get out of line, you report them.
Yeah, and much like the mafia when they're trying to get to someone to stay quiet who's on a jury or is a witness, for example.
Yeah, and right, Matthew, exactly. What you said there, I mean, this is not the way we do things in America, at least the America that I'm familiar with, you're familiar with. This looks like something out of, you might see in South America or somewhere like that. But this is not the way Americans we're not used to seeing this kind of behavior. So I do believe that we're going to start seeing
Chicago in-your-face politics.
And that's what we're seeing, straight from the White House, where Barack Obama, his home, right there in Chicago. Well, our guest today is Matthew Vadim, and he's an award-winning investigative journalist and senior editor for the Capital Research Center. Matthew has been featured on The O'Reilly Factor, CBS News, and The Daily Show. He's also an adjunct scholar with the James Madison Institute, and you can find his book, Subversion, Inc., on Amazon.com. And so,
it's an awesome book, I must add.
I know it's got to be. Of course it is. So now here in your article, you talk about the Justice Department has announced that it's going to award these organizations, these rebranded ACORN organizations are getting $163 million under the guise of improving relationships in the community. So what message does this give? And I'm not even going to call them protesters. These are thugs and criminals. What message are we giving these people?
Well, we're rewarding them for looting and for causing riots and for, racial antagonism. That's what we're doing. America has actually, sadly, been doing this since 1964, since the War on Poverty was ushered in by President Lyndon Baines Johnson. That's when the government started funding leftist groups through something called the OEO, the Office of Economic Opportunity, misleading name, of course, the Office of Redistribution and Theft, it should have been called. It doesn't exist anymore, but there's other parts of the government that carry on its work. And the idea was that you fund all these community groups, so-called community groups, that way they advance, they put on the government payroll. They're virtually government employees in the service of a left-wing revolution. And Americans have been paid billions of dollars in taxpayer money to the scum for the last 50 years. Mm-hmm. And most people aren't even aware that this is happening, that it's been a normal part of American life for a long time. And it's kind of, you know, it's time to make people aware of it, that we as taxpayers are subsidizing the destruction of our own country. And we have been for 50 years, and it's got to stop.
And it's incredible to think about those millions of dollars or taxpayer dollars going to pay the civil unrest and chaos that we've seen in Ferguson and Baltimore. And I suspect, you know, we're going to see this again. And just waiting for the right, you know, I keep thinking about what Rahm Emanuel says about never let a crisis go to waste. They're just waiting for that right opportunity to strike. And we'll see this again in some other city.
Yeah.
And here in the United States. Now, I know.
Why do you think there's been a massive upswing in cops being murdered across the country?
Yes.
And in violent crimes in general. In Baltimore, cops, if I were a Baltimore cop, I wouldn't want to do my job. Why the hell would you want to go out on the streets when you know that if you have to use force against a perp, that your city hall's not going to back you up? Like, what, you know? It's a state of lawlessness, and why would anybody want, in their right mind, want to be part of that? I'm surprised the governor of Maryland hasn't seized control of the local government, as I imagine he's entitled to create some kind of a control board and oust these criminals like Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake, who has let Blood Crips Nation of Islam people, Black Guerrilla Army, it's another criminal street gang, actually into her government. They've been helping, I'm putting that in quote marks, scare quotes, to patrol the streets. Why would anybody in their right mind get Bloods and Crips on the streets? deputizing them.
Oh, my God.
Things. It's crazy.
It's letting the criminals police the criminals. How does that work?
Well, yeah, it doesn't.
That's right.
That's the problem.
Well,
nobody's more of a hero to a radical leftist than a criminal. Criminal's the ultimate rebel.
Well, and Matthew, I know you touched on this just a minute ago, but I think it's something that we should reiterate. You know, what is the goal here? You've got all these groups like, you know, rebranded Acorns, and there's so many of them across the country, and they're creating all this chaos and unrest. Our inner cities are beginning to look like war zones. What are they trying to achieve here?
They're trying to generate as much unrest as possible because a crisis is an opportunity. And Rahm Emanuel and Hillary Clinton have said this, that a crisis is an opportunity to get good things, in their opinion, good things done. So when you have all sorts of problems, Americans, if they feel the society is collapsing around them, they're going to be less particular about the Bill of Rights. They're going to be less concerned about you know, the norms of governance in American society. They're going to be more open to a strong arm, a strong man, like Obama, for example, coming in and taking control of the situation. You know, when there's rioting in the streets and there's people setting fires all over the place, and when you're at risk of being shot to death for going to the grocery store because you're the wrong color, in other words, because you're white, or some other, you know, just not black, people are going to be more deferential to authority, I would say. And they're going to, you know, have less of a problem with an autocratic leader. And Barack Obama is extremely autocratic. Like, basically, is there anything that Barack Obama does that isn't an impeachable offense? I mean, the guy gets up in the morning.
Yes. I mean, how many times could we have a...
How can I F over the country today? How can I screw the country? Everything the guy does is an impeachable offense. It's just, I've got outrage fatigue. I just can't get excited about whatever he's done, because in normal times, everything would have caused, you know, an uprising against him, and yet not today, and we don't even have a party
There's no opposition party in Congress.
There's none. There's
no party. McConnell and John Boehner bend over backwards to do whatever Obama tells them.
You're exactly right.
And this is not going to. This is not going to have a pretty ending. I'm not sure what's going to come of it, but things are going to get far worse before they get better, if they ever get better.
And I'm just hoping we can get him out of the White House. That's what I'm worried about now. I want him out, and we just pray to God that we can keep Hillary out of the White House. But you're right. I think it's definitely going to get a whole lot worse before we see it get better. And all these stuff.
I try to
maintain positive attitude, but you're so right. I'm
a pathological optimist, actually. Uh-huh. And so if I'm depressed about America's future, that's bad.
Exactly. And you have to be realistic. I mean, things are bad, you know, and like you said, there's no opposition. There's nobody standing up to this guy. And so he's just rolling all over us, just rolling his agenda out to transform America.
It's all deliberate. I can't stand it when conservatives, gullible conservatives and Republicans say Obama's stupid. He's an amateur. He doesn't know what he's doing. Oh, yes, he does. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's quite brilliant, evil brilliant, but still, you know, brilliant. He knows what he's doing. He knows that he's causing trouble. And this is part of the plan. This is part of the plan to pay back America, to take it down a few pegs because of this strange psychological, you know, daddy issues or whatever that he has.
Right. He's using his community organizing skills, and so we're seeing community organizing.
Community disorganizing skills.
Yeah.
You're right. So Curtis,
he doesn't know how to create anything. He only knows how to destroy.
There you go.
Good point. Matthew, I wanted to go back to something you had in your article, which I found to be an interesting dynamic. And you talk about the tension that has always existed between first with Acorn, now with Moore and like organizations, between the predominantly white leadership of those organizations and the mostly non-white foot soldiers, being the rent-a-mobs that actually go do the destruction and the fomenting of such. So can you explain
that?
That's
always been the case with Acorn, yes. It was founded by a white guy named Wade Rathke, the whitest of white guys. Okay, I'm pretty pale, but he's paler, and redheaded, funny looking kind of guy. But you know, quite apart from that, it's always been the case that white leftists and liberals and progressives and communists have run the place because they don't trust blacks. You know, they're condescending, just like all left wingers are. They don't think blacks are good enough. They don't think they're smart enough to be trusted with everything. That's any kind of responsibility. You know, it's the same principle behind affirmative action. Affirmative action makes a presumption that blacks are inferior. And so do the leaders of Acorn. And what they'll do is they let the people running the place day to day, like the executive director or administrators or whatever, they're constantly changing their titles. It's weird. At least they were when they were active at Acorn. As such, but they'll always have a black front man, whether it's Maude Heard, who was a disgruntled social worker from Boston, or, you know, the various other people that they've had in charge at various times. So they want to put a black face forward, and that's the way they've already always operated pretty well. But it's always white liberals and white Marxists that have really maintained control of the place with an iron fist.
It reminds me of what we see going on with the Jesse Jacksons and the Al Sharptons. You got these guys out front, and they keep talking about how they're for all the black people and all the little people, and yet we continue to see the black people. And people within the inner city are poor. Things keep getting worse for them, and yet, these guys keep getting the big paychecks. I'm talking about Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, and don't even have to pay their taxes for that matter.
Yeah.
Yes. No.
And Matthew,
I
know you
are. It's
amazing
how many of them don't pay their taxes.
I know, and that's basically a prerequisite to work at MSNBC. So, got to have
so
that on the
seems,
resume.
Like the Melissa Harris Perry, the one who wears those tampon earrings.
Absolutely.
A buffoon.
Exactly.
A complete buffoon, an idiot who just spews drivel, politically correct, post-structuralist weirdness every day.
Exactly. Well, Matthew, I know you're at an engagement.
What we used to call a crazy person. Yeah.
I know you're at an engagement, so I don't want to take up too much more of your time. But and do thank you for being with us and stay away. Do not pass by the table that had the goat. I would stay away from that if I were you.
I will.
But before you go, please tell people where they can find your articles and also your book.
Okay. Well, the article that we've been talking about is called something. What is it? I've written so many, it's hard to remember.
It's called Ferguson
Renimov is Exposed. It's at frontpagemag.com, Front Page Magazine Online, which is a publication of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. My day job is as a senior editor at Capital Research Center, a conservative think tank / watchdog group. We study the politics of philanthropy and who funds leftist groups and so on. That's capitalresearch.org is the website. And our office is right near where I am right now in Kazakhstan. I mean, in the embassy of Kazakhstan.
There you
and, and my personal website is just my name, MatthewVadum.com. That's M-A-T-T-H-E-W, V as in Victor, A, D as in David, U, M as in mother.com. And I put almost all of my articles up there so they can be read there. And got a brand new article today at frontpagemag.com about Sid Vicious, Sidney Blumenthal, and what a D-bag he is.
Very good. And you can also find his book, Subversion Inc., out on Amazon.com. I tell you what, Matthew, enjoyed having you with us, and please enjoy yourself this evening, and please come back anytime.
I better move in before the bar closes.
There you go. Sounds good.
Okay. Anytime.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Matthew. And that was Matthew Vadum, who is an award-winning investigative journalist. His articles have appeared in the Weekly Standard, Fox News, Wall Street Journal, and he's also an adjunct scholar at the James Madison Institute. We appreciate him being with us this afternoon, and we do need to take a break right here. This is Jennifer Meadows with Curtis Mang. You're listening to Graceland on WNJC 1360. We will be back in just a moment.
It feels like you're frozen, petrified. You're struggling with your mortgage payments. The bills begin to pile up. Not knowing what to do, you do nothing at all. And that's the worst thing you can do. Because if you take action, if you do something about your mortgage problems, you're far more likely to get the most positive outcome. Making Home Affordable is a free government program. Call 888-995-HOPE to talk one-on-one with a housing expert about the options that are right for you. Real help, real answers, right now. Call 888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov and do something about your mortgage problems. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Unexpected reactions to smart financial decisions brought to you by FeedThePig.org.
Well, I finally did it. I opened a 401k.
So you're giving up? Just like that?
Giving up on what?
On getting an inheritance from a distant relative.
Don't you think if there were a billionaire in the family, we'd know about it by now?
Listen to me. We are one phone call away from riding horses on our own private polo grounds. One call from christening yachts, having a butler, using summer as a verb.
How do you figure?
Look, everyone's got a rich uncle somewhere. It's statistics. So the best thing you can do is just prepare for the inevitable.
Right. Which is why I thought maybe it would be smart to take control of my finances. You know, start using a budget, get out of debt, set some retirement goals.
Budgets? Debt? You watch your mouth. Retirement shouldn't be a goal for us. It should be a way of life.
When it comes to financial stability, don't get left behind. Get tools and tips for saving at feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
I find meaning the broken locks of my life. freeway. Left me here alone. I may have lost my way now.
Live from Mississippi, here's Graceland with Jennifer Meadows.
Well, we are back, and this is Graceland on WNJC 1360. I'm Jennifer Meadows with Curtis Mang, and did want to give a quick shout-out to a friend of mine, Rick Trader. You can listen to his show, the Conservative Commandos radio show, weekdays on this station. So wanted to just say hello to him before we get started into our next topic. So George Stephanopoulos is catching some heat from people about this $75,000 undisclosed donation to the Clinton Foundation, and we're waiting for our other co-host of the show, Charles Albert Johnson III, will be with us in just a few minutes, but he's in some hot water here, Curtis, but at the end of the day, and we're going to get into this a little bit more in just a few minutes, but he's definitely catching some heat, but I don't think much is going to be done.
Well, again, as we stated at the beginning of the show, he signed a 7-year, $105 million contract in 2014. So there are 105 million reasons why ABC does not want to do anything to upset that apple cart. But he is catching some flack for some journalistic ethics violations, and I find it fascinating that any story involving the Clintons would have anything to do with questionable ethics.
No, that just doesn't happen unless it's it's a couple times a day maybe, but
at least certainly,
but that does, and you bring up a good point, and that was actually one of my first questions to you guys, and we're still waiting for Charles, but it does highlight the liberal bias, and it's a problem. Here we have not only is this undisclosed $75,000 check written to the Clinton Foundation, but also, I think it goes way beyond that, because Stephanopoulos himself was Bill Clinton's press secretary. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, this does highlight the liberal bias. It's beyond liberal bias, actually. It's just out and out leftist propaganda that's coming off of the network television. So, what do you think, how sad it is to have, George Stephanopoulos reporting on, the Clintons' foreign donations, mm-hmm. and then here we have this come up about his own donation.
Well, here's the thing about Stephanopoulos. I mean, to me, he's lost all credibility, and not perhaps for the obvious reason, which was that he interviewed Peter Schweitzer, who was the author of the book Clinton Cash, which deals with questionable donations to the Clinton Foundation as well as very questionable reporting of such donations. And in the interview, Stephanopoulos questions Schweitzer's objectivity since he apparently spent some time working in the Bush White House. Now, how Stephanopoulos could even do such a thing as far as question Schweitzer's objectivity given Stephanopoulos's background is beyond me. But what really it truly has shown me that Stephanopoulos has no credibility is this: he does not understand the whole process of being a media shill. When one is a media shill for a particular person, the customary practice is for that person to pay you to be the shill. In Stephanopoulos's case, he pays the Clintons for that privilege. Now, how dumb is that?
Exactly. I know. Exactly. And I do believe Charles is with us. Charles, are you there?
Yes, indeed. I'm here. Jennifer, Curtis, glad to be with you again on Graceland.
Hello, Charles.
Awesome. Well, Charles, we are talking about the Stephanopoulos, the $75,000 undisclosed donation, and really kind of getting away from that a little bit and just talking also about liberal media bias. And this it's not illegal what's going on with all of this, but it does definitely bring up questions of ethics. And real quickly, and I know you were getting into this, Curtis, but why is this a problem? We've been seeing liberal bias forever, but we got George Stephanopoulos giving giving money to the Clintons, and he was the press secretary for Bill Clinton. You know, why is this a problem?
Well, journalistically speaking, this is the height of corruption. It's not illegal, as you point out, but at the same time, when I went to journalism school, we had to take this mandatory class our senior year called Journalism Ethics. And in it, we explored being a transparent journalist, avoiding conflicts of interest, though not illegal, impugn the integrity of any media personality. So this is what we were trained, but liberals in the profession, and you discover this when you graduate college and you actually go and start working in these places. And mm-hmm. I've worked in many newsrooms in my days as a media personality and as a cameraman. I can tell you that the liberal bias is so thick you can't even cut through it. Media these days don't care about journalism ethics. It's all about activism, and it's all about protecting and defending those that they would like to prevail in elections. That's why Democrats get more favorable coverage from the mainstream media than Republicans. Republicans have 3 times to 5 times as more negative stories run than Democrat candidates. All these things are very well documented. So we understand now that, yes, even though it is corruption, it's journalistic corruption, what Stephanopoulos has done, but most people just frankly are not going to care because it's the status quo. You know, this is what we're used to. This is what we've been used to. But back in the days before the advent of Fox News and the what I call the Fox effect that Fox News has had on the rest of media because they kick everybody's butt in the ratings.
They
that
do.
Now you have seen the more traditional news networks go toward having an editorial side of the news broadcast as well as a hard news side. See, once upon a time, all that existed was the so-called hard news side, and it was easy for Democrats and liberal-leaning media people to infiltrate the hard news section and to really basically make it an activist section for liberal policies and politicians. Only since the advent of Fox News have we now been able to call them out on that, and these things like the Stephanopoulos undisclosed donations to the Clinton Foundation. Now these things are becoming known. If this story had happened 20 years ago, 25 years ago, nobody would know about it.
And I like what you said about media ethics class, because I think probably most of the people in our media now, and I'm just talking across the board, the majority of them, I don't know if they skipped that class or I don't know what the hell they taught. What are they teaching that class? I don't know. But Curtis, quickly, and before we move to our next question, tell us why is this a problem? This whole ethics and, you know, Stephanopoulos, we're coming into a, you know, an election, and we've got Hillary running. You know, it seems pretty obvious, I guess, really.
Well, it is, and you know, there has been a number of people, in fact, a lot of people, have called for ABC to remove Stephanopoulos from any coverage of the 2016 election. Now, whether they do that or not, I don't know. You know, given what they have doled out and will dole out to him in salary over the next several years. But it reminded me of an old Marx Brothers movie, and it kind of goes like this. In the movie Animal Crackers, Groucho is talking with Chico, who has just been hired as one of the musicians to play at a party for a rich socialite. And so Groucho asked Chico, you know, what they get paid to play, and Chico says, well, they get $10 an hour. So Groucho asked, well, what do they get paid for not playing? Chico says $12 an hour. But for not rehearsing, we get $15 an hour. And so Groucho asked the next logical question, which is, what did he get for not rehearsing? And Chico says, well, you can't afford us. And I thought about that, you know, when I'm looking at, you know, ABC and George Stephanopoulos, you know, they're paying him $15 million a year, and that seems like a lot of money to pay for ABC to pay their chief political correspondent not to cover politics.
Exactly. And I mean, it does. I mean, here we are. We're right on top of it's presidential election time. We're getting right on top. And yet here he is, such a conflict of interest. And mm-hmm. it certainly looks like, you know, they're just kind of rolling out the red carpet for a Hillary nomination. God, I hope not. But my next question, you know, we've been talking about the federal Communications Commission and all the changes that are being made there, and just what we're discussing here. What does this mean for conservatives and Republicans as far as media goes? And something I mentioned in my opening, there have been millions of dollars by media groups, media organizations, even the Fox News group gave. I can't remember if it was 1 million or 5 million. I'd have to go back and look. But it's lots of money coming from media organizations into the Clinton Foundation. So what does this look like? You know they're not going to be giving money to Republicans. So what do you say to that, Charles?
Well, listen, it's very, very disturbing, that trend, especially with Hillary Clinton running for president. I mean, it's just extremely troubling that we see so many donations going into the Clinton Foundation, but there's also donations from Muslim countries that behead homosexuals and abuse women.
That's right.
And it's codified into their law. So I think that there is a way that conservative politicians can definitely use this and exploit this. I mean, attack ads on this topic are flooding my brain right now, even as we speak. So I know that there's a plethora of avenues, a plethora of angles to attack this. You talk about the war on women, the war on gays, but Clinton's taking all of this money, these donations from Muslim countries that oppress mm-hmm. homosexuals and throw them off of rooftops and have countries and laws in their countries where the women can't even drive, can't even be outside without being in the presence of their husband, father, or elder brother. And so we're in a place where conservatives can really capitalize on this story, and I think that's the silver lining here for conservatives.
And I do believe we need to seize on these issues and get out there in front of the camera and talk about it, articulate these things. And that's my biggest criticism of people on the right. They run from media. They're scared to death that the media is going to catch them on something. And so they just hide. They hide under their desk and they don't say anything. But getting back to this question here, Curtis, about Republicans, and it does look like the deck is stacked for a Democratic nomination for president, for Hillary, actually. But what do you think, Curtis?
Well, I think you're right. You know, when you look at the donations from media individuals like Stephanopoulos and Judy Woodruff as well, and media organizations, including, as you said, I think the parent company of Fox. So it does loom a little scary coming up when you've got media organizations donating to an organization where the one of the principals is a leading candidate for the president of the United States. That is a disturbing trend, and as Charles says, we as Republicans or we as conservatives need to make hay out of it. And Jennifer, I concur that Republicans are often bad at articulating, and so I think this is an opportunity to see if we can shine through and get the point across that this cannot stand.
And there's so much to seize on here. You know, they could go so many different directions with this. So we'll see what happens. But thank you for listening to Graceland on WNJC 1360. I'm Jennifer Meadows with Curtis Mang and political insider Charles Albert Johnson III. We're going to be moving into our next topic. This was just totally killed me yesterday. You know, here we have Iraqi forces, civilians fleeing ISIS. as they're gaining control of Ramadi, or they already have. They've gained control of Ramadi this week. And yet we have the president out there talking about climate change is the biggest threat.
Yes.
We have right now, just the biggest threat we have right now. So, moving into this topic, what's going on here? Here we have yesterday, the president was at a commencement speech for the Coast Guard and was saying that, didn't say anything about ISIS. He says climate change is the biggest threat we face. So, I'm sorry, what is the disconnect here? I'll start with you, Curtis, and then you, Charles.
Well, I would say that if he hadn't done it previously when he spoke at the Coast Guard Academy, he officially jumped the shark on this one. He claimed that global warming puts the United States and the military at risk and that failure to act would be a dereliction of duty, which I find astounding to say. But I could just picture a cadet in the graduating class, you know, listening to Obama's speech and nudging the cadet next to him and saying, you know, did he just really say what I think he said? And then the cadet next to him says, yes, and he keeps saying it. And then the first cadet says, well, about climate change, what are we supposed to do, shoot at it? I think, because that's the way it comes across, is you know, it's something looming that we need to attack.
Well, and there was a little video, I can't remember if it was on Fox News or where, and it did kind of pan the crowd, and most people were on their phones and staring up into the air, or they were asleep or something, so I'm not sure they were paying attention. But Charles, I mean, what is going on here? I mean, here we have ISIS is just going across the Middle East, just taking city after city, and here we have the president talking about, you know, the biggest threat we have is climate change.
Yes, because it's due to climate change. You know, that's the reason why Boko Haram was able to capitalize on some drought that took place. They were able to, because it was climate change, it was the release of excess CO2 into the atmosphere. Yes, it is causing global terrorism.
There you go.
Now, what's causing global terrorism is a fundamentalist interpretation of Islam, that point blank. The Quran, the Hadith, the biography of Muhammad, this is what is causing global terrorism. We have a president that's so out of touch that he thinks something that's just completely dreamed up by liberals, this anthropomorphic global warming or man-caused global warming. Now, don't get it twisted. The earth does warm, yes. The earth does cool, yes. In fact, it's been cooling off for the past 10 years. That's why about 10 years ago, the liberals stopped saying, quote unquote, global warming, and they changed the terminology to, quote unquote, climate change, because you can't very well hold up a narrative that says global warming if the earth is now cooling and the polar ice caps are now expanding. So they
had
to change the terminology from global warming to climate change. They want to fence both sides of the debate. They want to make their position unassailable by saying whether it warms or whether it cools. Well, it's climate change. No, climate change is not caused by we puny humans. Climate change is caused by the Earth's rotation around the sun and the specific positioning on its axis. I learned that in grade school. I don't know when the president or liberals ever learned this lesson.
Well, he went to Harvard, though. He went to Harvard, and he may not have learned that anywhere. And we're just about out of
on the fact that the sun causes it.
Well, and you know what? All this climate change discussion is nothing but a global power grab. There's no science behind it. And, guys, we are out of time. Appreciate Matthew Vadim for being with us. Charles, please tell our listeners where they can go to find you.
Yes, they can find me on social media, Charles Albert Johnson III, my whole name, because it's a million Charles Johnsons out here.
There you go. Curtis, you.
I've got a website. It's mangwright.com. You can find my two books available there. You can also find me at JenniferMeadowsGraceland.com and at Curtis Mang on Twitter.
And you can find me on Twitter at JM Graceland. You can also find me on Facebook. Just look for Graceland with Jennifer Meadows. And archives of this show are on TK Radio Network. Also look for comdiginews.com as well. Thank you for listening, Philadelphia. Take care. God bless. And until next time, have a great afternoon.